Music, news, interviews, live events, and more. Welcome to the Hivecast with Matt Pinfield.
Hey, it's Matt Pinfield, and it's the Hivecast, and I'm extremely excited to have the guys from Soundgarden with us today. The new album, it's called King Animal. It's available now. It's a great record. Guys, welcome. Good to see you.
Good to be here, Matt.
Hey, Matt. Hello.
You know, I saw you last night. You played at Irving Plaza in New York City. An amazing show. And I just said to myself, I know it's been 16 years, but felt like you didn't miss a beat. And when you listen to the new album, King Animal, it feels like it's in perfect succession with the albums that you did before, in my mind. I mean, and I know a lot of your fans feel the same way. It's definitely modern, but it feels like the next step for Soundgarden.
Yeah.
Matt, tell us how it ended up happening. Matt, it was really, to record some of your songs was really the catalyst to get you guys in a room together. Tell me about that story.
I guess that was one of the reasons that we initially decided to do that. I think everyone was hoping that would happen after we played some shows and we, just kind of got back in a room together and made noise. And once we did put our mind to it, it was pretty easy. I mean, everyone had a lot of ideas, and I think we were in a really good place. We'd played some shows. We definitely had our sound back. We had our chemistry was completely intact. So it seemed like the next logical step was to write a new batch of songs, which is something that I had always hoped that would happen. When the band broke up in '97, I was sort of pining for another Soundgarden record, so I'm glad that it finally happened.
So was Eyelid's Mouth the first thing that you worked on?
Yeah. I guess that was like a demo that I sort of showed the guys.
The first thing that we learned together as a group, right?
Yeah.
I guess so.
And,
thing I remember learning.
Yeah.
Kim, how was that done?
Yeah,
so, Matt, you wrote the drums and the music, and then Chris brought in the lyrics.
Yeah, I wrote the music, and I recorded a demo with my friend, and it had I think it had one more part to it that we took out, and then Chris recorded a version of it live, and then Chris took it back to his home studio and wrote the lyrics and did a demo, and that was the first thing that I guess he played for us that was sort of a completed song. And once we all heard that with his vocals, it just felt like it was on. It's like we were ready to go.
How about you, Kim? I mean, did you have a few things written before you guys got back together again? Were some of the ideas of things that ended
there
up?
There were ideas that had been kicking around since, for a while. But there was one song that Matt and Ben and I had jammed on instrumentally maybe 15, 16 years ago. But it was never fully arranged. And there were no lyrics for it.
What did that song become?
Thousand Days Before.
Yeah.
Chris remembered that a tape of Ben and Matt and I jamming on that, and he remembered the riff, and he kind of figured it out and came up with some vocal ideas for it, but he wasn't happy about the vocal ideas. And then the four of us got together and came up with an arrangement, that was pretty solid, and Chris came up with a new vocal part for it that everyone loves.
You can bring this through, guys, and we'll, thanks, Mike. How
thanks,
you doing?
Mike.
Here you are.
Well, thank you, Ben.
Now, Ben, one of the songs that you had written started, I guess, shortly after the initial breakup was Tari, that's on the album.
Yeah, have you ever heard of Erden Tubbs?
No, tell me.
And he wrote that. I stole it from him.
He did?
When I was 9.
When you were 9 years old. So,
Can I have a stir thingy?
You know what I never got to ask you guys? I wanted to ask you how you felt and what you thought the first time you heard Johnny Cash covering Rusty Cage. What was your feeling?
I was embarrassed.
Seriously. I felt pretty proud.
Yeah, I like how he took that, how he just kind of made it just kind of a, kind of that rolling country beat, and like the end of the song that's a really weird rhythmic riff part. He just kind of did it like boom, 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 ba-da-dum, boom, boom, ba-da-dum, dum, right. Like, yeah. I thought that was really cool. He just stripped it down. And I think it really brought out the coolness of the lyric on that song.
I've never heard it.
And well, his backing band were the Heartbreakers, right?
Yeah.
Tom
yeah.
Petty. And I think they came up with that arrangement.
Yeah. So I thought it was really cool. He did an interview on like Larry King or something. And he was talking about how the lyrics reminded him of like, the Beat Poets and stuff like that. And I'd never thought of it that way. Well, it's like when you did that Nine Inch Nails song, you know?
Hurt, yeah.
I never really listened to that song before I heard the Cash version, and I went back and listened to the Nine Inch Nails version, and it's really cool. It's really dark, but somehow the Cash version brings out, like, that darkness of the song better than...
definitely feel the pain and...
than the Nine Inch Nails version. Good. But,
I mean, unbelievable. It's more human. Aspect. It's more vulnerable.
Yeah.
Now, working with Adam Kasper, who mixed Down in the Upside and has done records. Matt, with you with Pearl Jam. Mm-hmm. You worked with him there. He's worked with Foo Fighters, a bunch of people.
That's right.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I remember when I was out doing the Down on the Upside radio special with you guys, he drove me back to the airport. I think we went out, Kim, that night with Steve Turner and Mudhoney. We were all out running around Seattle. Uh-oh. It was a great night. But such a great guy. Yes. Younger and wild.
Those days are gone.
Yes. But that was, so you guys, when it came that time, obviously all of you liked Adam Kasper production.
But... I think I sent an email to the guys suggesting that we, you know, just get Adam down to the studio for King Animal. You got King Animal in my mind.
Yes,
I'm still waking up.
I was doing that last week, waking up.
But so I suggested that he come down and just listen to what, you know, we'd been rehearsing and writing and whatnot. And he took a hard disk home from these, you know, rehearsal tapes. And it just sort of led to him going into the studio with us. And he's someone that we're really comfortable with. And he knows how to get our sound right. He knows how to record everything just the way we like it. He's worked with us individually on other projects.
Yep.
So he's definitely part of our family, and we felt real fortunate to have him there again.
Natural and proactive was the whole thing.
Which other things did he work on besides your Pearl Jam records, those two records, Pearl Jam and Riot Act?
I've done like recording sessions with him. Like, he records, like, you know, singers and bands and things like that. We did the Geddy Lee solo record together.
That's great.
We did a Japanese artist named Aya together.
Yeah,
he recorded.
I played on Aya and Probot.
Yeah.
Probot, yeah, he did that.
Wow, that's cool.
And then he did some stuff on Ben's solo record that I got to play on. It's really awesome. He mixed that.
Okay. When it comes time to pick the songs for your set, because you're now going all the way back to Screaming Life and things like that, how do you guys end up picking it? Do you change? I mean, obviously you change it pretty much.
I normally come up with a rough draft, and then the guys will suggest songs to put in or take out or things like that. Chris used to write all of our set lists, and we normally would stick to one set list per tour, sort of, you know, and then, like, change up five or six songs, but it's been fun to just change up the sequencing and bring in more obscure tracks, I guess you could say. Like, we've been playing Incessant Mace on this tour, this little mini tour.
Did you notice that last night?
Yeah. It was great. I mean, I mean, that was the thing that was so much fun for me, is hearing something.
Did the curtains open fast enough, or were they too slow?
No, they actually, they opened fast enough. And I love the way they closed. That wall of feedback that you guys did, it wasn't just feedback, it was noise, it was sounds. Yeah. It was great. I mean, I could feel it vibrating through me. You left the stage first, Matt.
Did you see me running for cover?
Yeah.
That's why my ears are running.
Yeah. You can end up like Townsend with tinnitus or something. No.
We all are. It's all accumulative.
A little bit of ear ringing and sleep not having.
But it sounded great. And then to come back and do Rusty Cage, because I think most people...
No, that was a true encore.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were Matt put his street pants back on.
I put my dry clothing on. I was drinking beers.
I was going to change my shirt down to the room down below by the stage. And I opened the door, and we could hear everything. I was like,
they started chanting one more song.
Really?
And I was like, they're not leaving, you guys. Where's Matt? Get him.
You were, like, pretty much out the door, man.
I was out the door, man.
Yeah.
I was like, two pieces of pizza.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite tracks on the new record? I mean, the record's great. Oh, go ahead.
I really like playing Crooked Steps and Tari and Blood on the Valley Floor.
Yeah,
those are all... kind of fun guitar songs. I would actually say that Non-State Actor is a really fun guitar song, except for, you know, I haven't gotten to playing it right yet.
It's really hard.
So it's a tough one because of the time changes and the notes over there.
Yeah, it's also
really
it's
fast.
Also kind of
yeah,
quick.
Crowd's head every night we play it. So
isn't it? I mean, you guys all sound great. Chris's voice is as great as ever. I mean, he's hitting all the notes.
Yes.
You know, sometimes when people haven't played in a long time or it's been years from now, I mean, there are artists. I mean, one of the things that Robert Plant actually said to a close friend of mine about one of the reasons why he wasn't going to do the Zeppelin tour was because he felt that if he wasn't able to hit the high notes, it wasn't fair to his fans.
Yeah.
He just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And this is what he said. When he was actually getting ready to do his take the picture for his Band of Joy, the album cover and his photos.
Mm-hmm.
He was hanging out with a friend of mine and just said, you know, but Chris is still able to hit all the high notes. And I think when he goes into the wailing, the screaming, it just, I mean, it sounds to me as good as it did.
I think he's sort of, the technique might be a little bit different now, you know?
Yeah.
Like maybe he's pushing the air differently or whatever. Like, but he's always been a real king of technique, like the thing that he can do where he's sort of screaming, it's like a screaming falsetto, like I don't know what, like full voice. He's got this weird unique thing that he does that's completely unto himself that I've never heard another singer do. So I think the way that he's approaching it now is just as a total, you know, pro performer guy that's been playing, you know, thousands of gigs throughout his whole life. And you know, we're trying to, like, be a little more dynamic on stage, too. And he's been sort of aware of that as far as just, like, stage volume. And the way that he's monitoring now, he's got some inner monitors going on. And I think that really helps with his ability to hear himself.
Now, about the tour that you're doing, I mean, I know in January you're starting, you'll be back in New York City and you'll be all over the country. How long do you expect the tour to last?
A couple hundred years.
I'll make sure that as long as I'm alive, I keep coming to see you then.
A couple hundred years.
Every time you're in town. But what do you think?
Was it 3 weeks or something?
Yeah, about 3 to 4 weeks.
3.5 weeks.
Yeah. Are you going to do Europe as well after that?
No.
I know you don't necessarily love going over there.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I mean, love the fans there, love the cities. Just, you know.
Yeah, we're under
ask any rock
time restraints.
I love it.
Yeah.
My next year is going to be kind of crazy.
Well, and I could live there. Touring is a different thing.
Yeah. So, Matt, obviously, you're super busy because you're going to have a new Pearl Jam album coming out soon, too.
Yeah.
And I remember how excited Stone was when I talked to him. He just said, you know, it brought so much joy to my heart to see Soundgarden playing together again. And we're just happy to have, he said, the greatest drummer in two of the best bands. He was. Tell me about you, you know, how you're going to be splitting your time, because you do have a new album coming out, too.
Very carefully.
I mean, have you sat there and, I mean, obviously, you work working together. You guys are working on your schedule.
Yeah. I mean, it's all sort of planned out right now, and we haven't really made any official statements yet, but it's all, you know, the calendar's all color-coded for the two bands, and so, but, you know, I feel real fortunate to be able to do this, and I've always gigged hard all my, you know, life, my professional life, I guess, so I really feel fortunate that I can do that, and there's an audience for it, so, you know, why not?
Yeah. I mean, there's audiences for both bands as strong as ever, so I think it's fantastic. Guys, I want to thank you for coming by, and I want to
tell
everybody to pick up King Animal. Great new album from Soundgarden, if I say so myself. And
thanks, Matt.
Thanks for taking the time to come in today to the Hive.
Thank you, brother.
Guys.
Appreciate it.
This has been the Hivecast with Matt Pinfield. For all things music, news, interviews, live events, and more, go to mtvhive.com.